really is one of the most important stories, not just of the day, of the week, but important stories of the year. And it is our health system in Northern Ireland. You've already heard commentary on the Nolan Show over recent days, with doctors describing a senior doctors describing a two-tier health system developing in Northern Ireland, where the rich get treated and the poor sit on a waiting list. This is happening. Northern Ireland's healthcare system, here's the next statement, is at the point of collapse, according to the Royal College of Surgeons. They're saying this because waiting times have reached an all-time high. More than 300,000 people are waiting to see a consultant, according to figures from the Department of Health. Mark Jones is from the Royal College of Surgeons. Good morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Stephen. Good to get talking to you.
And it's good to get talking to you. And I guess what I need to do, Mark, is establish if the Royal College of Surgeons is exaggerating just to get publicity by describing this as at the point of collapse, because that is a big statement to make from a body like yours.
It is a big statement to make. And obviously the words were chosen to indicate that that is a concern. I mean, the figures tell a story of, you know, people who are waiting far longer than they should for treatment. In many cases, that is very urgent. The fact is that there are, you know, people with a number of issues, some which will be life-threatening conditions. Within my own field of cardiothoracic surgery, there are people with cancer diagnoses, and they're having to wait for treatment. We've known in the past that cancer targets have been breached, and those that are working in the health and social care are doing their best to try and do what they can. But our big concern is that you know, without the guidance of a political system at present and the funding to support that we struggle to see how these problems are going to be fixed.
Mark, you've described the situation as distressing, and you mentioned cancer there, and I want to focus on that because I think it's something that we all understand and we all know any of us could get at some stage in our lives. Have you seen patients whose cancers have grown or whose cancers have developed while they've been on a waiting list when it shouldn't have happened?
That's a very good question, Stephen. The challenge of trying to answer those questions is that it's very difficult within the shorter timeframes that we're talking about to give conclusive evidence one way or the other. There are studies which would suggest that cancers can progress rapidly and lead to a detrimental outcome. There are others that suggest that things may be more stable. I mean, I suppose what is reasonable to keep in mind is that we have a target of trying to get, you know, 95% of people treated within 62 days of their diagnosis, and at the moment we're achieving that target in just over 50% of cases.
So what's happening with the other 50% of people?
Sorry?
So with the other 50% of people, are their lives being impacted to the point where their lives are more at threat with serious illness because they're sitting on a waiting list? Like, as a layperson, where my mind's going here is your health has got to be compromised if you're not getting the treatment you need. It's fair enough for that me to conclude that. I'm trying to ascertain from you as an expert, Mark, how dangerous is it? You've described it as distressing. Why is it distressing for you?
It is distressing because when I meet an individual in a clinic and share a diagnosis, confirm the treatment plan, they've already had their diagnosis of cancer for some time, they want to get the treatment as quickly as possible. What I would say very clearly is that I can see no advantage in further delay to their treatment and would share your concern that there is a threat to their health with ongoing delay.
So you actually...
How many of those may progress to a stage that the cancer will have spread further or reached a stage where a potential curative treatment has to be foregone to replace it with a palliative treatment is very difficult to say, but I think what is absolutely...
Do you suspect it's happening?
I would have thought that the reason that targets of 95% of people receiving treatment within 62 days was chosen for at least the basic premise that we both share, which is that earlier treatment with a diagnosis of cancer is much better than a delayed delayed treatment.
So, Mark, what are you...
We've seen it in various parts of the country with other aspects of surgery, heart surgery. We know that there's evidence that if patients don't get their heart surgery in a timely fashion, they can either end up coming back into hospital in a worse condition, perhaps having developed a heart attack in the interim, or sadly, some patients do die on a waiting list while awaiting treatment. And then obviously there's the other whole aspect, Stephen, of patients whose quality of life is severely impaired with, you know, vision problems, joint problems, things that are outside my direct field of expertise, but patients that have a severe impairment to their quality of life and they're having to wait a long time for surgery. You know, we saw in the figures yesterday that the Department of Health can tell us that there are over 100,000, almost 110,000 people waiting over a year for an outpatient appointment.
It's just over 108,000.
And over 25,000 people waiting more than a year for inpatient or day case treatments of some sort. And then there's the whole other aspect of patients waiting for other investigations.
What are you having to do when you sit down with one of your patients and you're saying, look, you've been diagnosed with cancer, so you're there to reassure them that there is treatment available to try to help them beat that cancer.
Yeah.
Are you having to tell them, I'm sorry, but you're going to have to sit on a waiting list now for possibly more than a year? Is that the reality? So I don't have cancer yet. Well, not that I know of. Is it possible that if I was diagnosed with cancer and went to see you, I'm going to be told, unless you've got thousands of pounds, you'll sit in a waiting list?
It would be highly unlikely that I would be giving an indication that you'd be waiting a year.
But some people are. Well, that's the point. Some people are.
Yes. In terms of a cancer diagnosis, as far as the patients that I'm involved in treating, I would be telling them that we will be getting them onto a waiting list and we will be doing the surgery as soon as is possible. We have issues within the healthcare system which mean that we don't always have the access to the theatre capacity, be that for staffing issues within theatres, wards, intensive cares, whatever. And so some patients are waiting longer. It would be, I could not think of a patient who would have to have waited that length of time for a lung cancer treatment, in my experience. But I do know that there are patients that are waiting beyond the 2 months or the 62 days that are recommended from time of diagnosis.
So in other words, there's a red flag list and it's rare that someone would wait that long, more than a year. But we're talking here about hip surgery and things like that. You're a senior surgeon, Mark.
I think probably a lot of the people that are waiting much longer are waiting for the non-cancer diagnosis. But that's not to detract, Stephen, from the fact that, you know, within those that have a cancer diagnosis, where there is a life-threatening condition, individuals are having to wait much longer than government targets have suggested would be desirable. And I guess, again, coming back to the point we made earlier, I think it is, intuitive that with a diagnosis of cancer, it is better to get early treatment than delayed treatment.
You're a senior surgeon, Mark. I have 2 minutes before the news. How much of an impact is it having on waiting lists, surgeons refusing to do overtime because of the pension rules that the Conservative government has brought in, which effectively means that if people earning over £150,000 a year earn more, that means that they're contributing more to their pension and they're penalised from a tax point of view, whereas in the past they got tax advantage to that. How much of that is an issue?
The Royal College of Surgeons has reported from across the country and found that a significant number of people were refusing to do extra waiting lists. I know that within England they've been given promises that would offset those concerns if they were brought into play. It has not affected my attitude to work at present. I'm still trying to do the best I can for the patients that I can. I know that I've spoken to a number of colleagues who either plan or have already decided to step back from their work, the intensity of work that they're doing in view of those changes.
What needs to happen, Mark? What can we do to sort this? Because the Department of Health's Permanent Secretary has publicly stated that funding of between $750 million and $1 billion is required to eradicate waiting lists. What can we do here?
Thankfully, Stephen, I don't have to make that decision, but I think it is very challenging to try to see success if we don't have a political solution and political decisions being made to carry something forward.
Yeah. In other words, where's our Stormont Assembly? Where's our local politicians? Where are our leaders? Mark, thank you very much indeed. There's a senior surgeon now, saying, where are the political decisions being made around this? And the reality is, there are none being made by your local politicians.